Numbers chapter 1. The book of Numbers is exactly as it suggests. It's a book that contains an awful lot of information. But the theme is the fact that God had Moses count the people of Israel. There's two senses that are found in this book. One to begin with, the first chapter we'll look at. And when they counted heads, they had 603,550 men that were that certain age. And then when they were just about to cross over to Jordan at the end of the book, they had another census, and there were 1,820 less people than there were to begin with. But they are numbering these people. Let's look and begin reading in verse 1. And the Lord spake unto Moses in the wilderness of Sinai, in the tabernacle of the congregation, on the first day of the second month, in the second year, after they were come out of the land of Egypt, saying. So this is 13 months after they came out of Egypt. They traveled for about a month, and they camped for just almost right at a year. Now it's time to get going, so God starts speaking. Take ye the sum of all the congregation of the children of Israel, after their families, by the house of their fathers, with the number of their names, every male at by their poles, from 20 years old and upward. I want to stop reading there. Moses is told to count the people of Israel, to count the men, to make sure that they have the an accurate count of the number. And they're designing the camp. They're setting up the way of travel. They are doing this tribe by tribe. And have you ever seen a diagram of the way they camp? They camped around the tabernacle, and each tribe in their separate place. And so we find here that no Moses has been told to count the people of Israel, but I want to ask you, why? Or better said, not why, but what criteria did he use? Now, notice what's going on. They're about to embark on the journey. They don't know what's ahead. They have no idea what's coming. Listen to me. They're living in a day when they do not know what is ahead. What might happen, what God might require or expect or demand, what might happen. And does that sound familiar to you? A day of uncertainty. But they are about to embark on the wilderness journey, and then more importantly, they're about to go into the promised land. At least that's the goal. So what would be the priority? That's my first point. The priority involved. What criteria does God use in counting these men? I thought about this. Well, what about someone who could build houses? I mean, they're going into the promised land eventually, and even though there are houses there, there's no doubt that when Israel comes in 2 million strong, they need somebody who can construct a place where they would dwell. That would be vitally important. But that's not what the criteria is all about. Well, what about this? What about somebody who could start a business and run a business? When they get to the promised land, they're going to need some businessmen, some people who can make sure that things are run. What about this? Someone who could raise crops. Surely there are crops in the promised land, but that will be good for maybe 1 year at the most. And these people of Israel, when they come in, 2 million of them at one time, they're going to need someone who knows how to plant a crop and raise some food, or they're going to die. But that's not the criteria that God uses in counting these men. What about men who are good husbands or good fathers? That surely would be important to raise their children right in the promised land. We could think of several different reasons, several different criteria that God would use in counting these men, but notice what he uses. Notice the point that's on his mind. Listen to me. The priority that's on God's mind is in verse 3 where it says, listen to what the Bible says. All that are able to go forth to war in Israel. All that are able to go forth to war in Israel. He says, I want you to count these men, and don't count the ones that can build houses, and don't count the ones that are good daddies. Don't count the ones that are business-minded. Don't count the ones who can raise crops when they get to the promised land. I want you to count them because there's a need for somebody to put their big boy pants on. It is time for somebody to realize there's a war ahead. There's a battle we're going to be facing. And we need to make sure that we're ready for the battle. But the criteria is those that's going to be able to fight. We find that in verse 3. We find it in verse 20, 22, 24, 26, 28, 30, 32, 34, 36, 38, 40, 42, and 45. Those words, be able to go forth to war. Someone who is able to fight because there's battles ahead. Now, there's no doubt there's going to be battles when they get into the promised land. There's enemies in the promised land. There's people already living there. They're not going to just give up their homes without a fight. And someone may say, well, why in the world would God run those people out of the promised land when it's their homes and their lands? I'll tell you why. Because of their sin. They had sinned to such a degree that God says, I'm going to deal with your sin and I'm going to help my people at the same time. That's how God works. So those people, those idolaters, those sinful people who were in the land that God had promised them would be run out or killed, but they were not going to give up without a fight. There were battles ahead. There was war ahead. And God says, I want you to count these men and you use one criteria. Those who are old enough to fight the fight. Said again, time to put your big boy pants on. And that's the day we're living in. It's time to put our big boy pants on. It's time to realize there's a fight around us. And by the way, it always has been. The priority involved is that they might be able to go forth to war. Because when we get there, if there's no one that's going to fight, we ain't going to win. If somebody doesn't realize the need and realize the problem and face the consequences and be willing to fight, we are going to lose. You see, the devil doesn't like losing territory to God's people. He had planted, if you will, those people in that promised land, and he wasn't going to give up easily. He wasn't going to let Israel just prance in and take over. Those people there were going to put up a fight. And that's how it is with the devil. Any ground he's gained in our lives, listen to me, he's not going to give up easily. Any ground he's gained in your life, he's not going to give up easily. He will fight to the end. And therefore, we need to be realizing this morning, there's a fight to be fought. There's a need that's important enough to fight as we should. There's a lot going on in these next few years in the people of Israel. There's a battle over the Jordan River in the Promised Land, no doubt about that, many battles. But before they ever get there, there's a battle of the wilderness. No water, no food. You think about it, 2 million people going through a desert. That's not easy. And God said, there's a battle ahead. Before you get to the battle, there's a battle. So you better have your big boy pants on. You better be really realizing there's a fight to be had. Not only that, but God is at work in the whole situation. Listen to me. God is working. He could have led them to wells of water and made sure they got plenty to drink. He could have taken them to a city along the way and let them go in and buy their victuals and get their food, but he didn't. As we'll see in just a minute, he led them through the wilderness to the place where there was no water and there was no food. So you see, it's not just the devil at work. Somehow we think that the only one that's working in our day is the devil. I'll tell you what, our God is working also. It is his hand we're seeing also. The priority involved. What criteria did they use? That somebody would be willing and able to fight. But then I want to mention number two, not only the priority involved, but the people involved. Who are these people? The devil's bunch? No. The people down to the red light district? No. The drug addicts and the drunks and the moonshiners? And no. These are God's people. Look in verse 2. Take ye the sum of all the congregation of the children of Israel. The children of Israel. The children of Israel after their families. They were family. They weren't just family. They were God's family. You hear what I'm saying? God is saying to his people, God is saying to his family, the Father is saying to his family, you're in for a battle. There's problems and trouble and ahead, and you better brace for it. It's time to put your big boy pants on. It's time to grow up and mature and face it as it is. It's not time to be a baby. It's not time to whine. It's not time to suck your thumb. It's time to get up and go. They are family. I'm saying this morning, even God's family are not exempt from anything. Anything that happens to the world can happen to us. Anything the world, the lost are faced with, we can be faced with and we will. We are not exempt from problems. We are not exempt from sickness. We are not exempt from difficulties. We are not exempt from battles and everything else the world has to face. We are God's people. Yes, we are. But that doesn't exempt us from anything else that happens in this world. They were family. They were God's family. Some of the most godly people I know suffer the most. Some people who love the Lord and serve Him and want to be faithful and are faithful are those who suffer the most. We are not exempt from anything else that's going on in this world. But since they're family, that means they were not alone. It wasn't just one man among 2 million. It wasn't just one lady or just one family. It was everybody in the whole family going through the same type of thing. So they had someone they could talk to, someone they could lean on, somebody who was going through the same thing they were going through. They were not alone. I say this to you this morning. If you're a part of the family, you are not alone. You have somebody who cares. You have someone you can turn to and get some help from and rely on. That's the way it's supposed to be. We are family. But they didn't just have family, they had a father. I'm talking this morning about being able to go forth to war. The people involved, they were family. They were going through a hardship, but they weren't going through it alone. They had each other, but they also had the Father, who could give them the real help they needed. We are not orphans this morning, folks. I know things are all out of whack. I know, but part of us are in here, and part of us are out there, and part of us are at home. But I want to tell you what, that has not gotten God confused. All that's going on in our world and our life has not got God confused and out of touch and out of control. It has not got away from Him. He is very much able to help you with what you're going through. The people involved, they were family. The people involved, they were fearful. Exodus 13:17, when they first start coming out of Egypt, first come out of their bondage. Verse 17 says, part of it says, God led them not through the way of the land of the Philistines, although it was near. In other words, there was a shorter path from where they were to the promised land than the one that God took. If I remember right, it was an 11-day journey, and it took them 40 years to make it. You're talking about a detour. You're talking about dead ends. But these people, now notice, let me read the rest of the verse. God led them not through the way of the land of the Philistines, although it was near. For God said, peradventure, the people repent when they see war, and they return to Egypt. God knew these people when he came out of Egypt with them, and he said, there is no way in the world they're ready for war. If I take them straight to the promised land, they are surely to be defeated, or they're going to run back to Egypt. So God knew they were fearful. They were afraid. They weren't ready. So God takes 40 years to develop some and to mature some and to help some and strengthen some, encourage some, and to kill some. So he is working. I'm talking about the people involved. They were family, but they were fearful. God knew their hearts, and they were not ready. There were all the battles ahead in the wilderness. There was a battle ahead in the promised land. And I said it before, I'll say it again. All this they don't know about. The uncertainty. They did know this. At best, we've got 11 days of traveling in a desert. At best, they didn't know what was ahead. They didn't know what to expect. And the uncertainty of what's going to happen now. Where is this taking us? What is going to happen next? Was putting fear in their heart. Sound familiar? They were afraid. God's people were afraid. And that's why God dealt with them like he did. They were fearful. They were afraid of what was ahead. And to be honest, rightfully so, humanly speaking. They were going out into a desert, 2 million people, into an area that's about 20,000 square miles of nothing but barren terrain, desert, sand, sun, and rocks. And they, humanly speaking, had a reason to be afraid. But before we criticize them, we better take a look at our own heart. We say they should have trusted God. Well, so should we. They should have obeyed the Lord. Well, so should we. Man alive, a mask makes us quit. So they are fearful. They're afraid. Can you imagine 2 million people in a desert and you're traveling and there is no water? Now you imagine that. We have not been using our water fountain, but we've made available these bottles of water around here because people, for an hour on a Sunday morning in an air-conditioned building, say, I gotta have some water. Can you imagine 2 million people in a desert with no water? And listen, there's not only no water left, there's no water to gather. And your wife's thirsty. And your children are thirsty. And your old mama and daddy are thirsty. And there's no water to give them. I tell you what, we can talk about them if we want to, but being fearful is understandable, humanly speaking. Can you imagine being in a in a desert with 2 million people and you run out of food completely. Have you ever been without food? I have. There have been more than one times that we ate the last thing in the house, and I mean the last thing in the house, and didn't have money to buy more. And it's easy for us to talk about the people of Israel and say they should have trusted God, but we need to look at our own self. Can you imagine no food? And not only that, during the wilderness journey, and I'm just touching on two or three different things, there's a whole lot more I'm not even touching on. Korah rose up. They were murmuring and complaining about Moses and not satisfied with how he was running things, and they rose up, Korah and all his bunch. So there's now distinction. There's the division among the people, and there's people going this way and people going that way. I'm telling you, it wasn't easy. Time to be ready for war. Time to be ready for the battle. Not just the promised land, even before they got to the promised land. I'm talking about they were fearful, and humanly speaking, they had a right to be. And humanly speaking, maybe we do. But that does not exclude the fact that we have the same God they had. I don't know if I'll get to it this morning. It sure don't look like it. These people, I'm talking about the priority involved. He said, count the ones that'll go to war. Because there's a battle coming. There's a war on the way. There's trouble coming. There's trials coming. It's going to be a rough road for a while. Not only the priorities involved, but the people involved. They were family. They were fearful. But notice, number three, they were following. Exodus 13:18 says, but God led the people about through the way of the wilderness. Could use many, many verses. Deuteronomy 29:5, God said, I have led you 40 years in the wilderness. He said, I led you the whole way. I never forgot you. I never forsook you one time. He said, I am leading you. They were family. They were fearful, but they were following. In other words, God was the one leading them. Listen to me. God was the one leading them everywhere they went. To where there was no water, yes. To where there was no food, yes. Later on, to the where the battles were over Jordan in the promised land, yes. God was leading them, and he led them all the way. Psalm 107, verse 4 says, I have led you these 40 years in the wilderness. The last part of that verse says, they wandered in the wilderness in a solitary way. They wandered in the wilderness in a solitary place. That word solitary means wasteland. It means barren. The last part of that verse says, they found no city to dwell in. God could have already said it. Could have led them to a city where they could have gotten water and food. On the way to the promised land, he could have led them to a place where they could have gotten what they need, but he led them around those cities. He kept them away from those places of provision. He made sure they didn't get there. Why? Where they would have to trust him. To where they had to trust him. To where they had to trust him. Do you hear me? God is putting us in a place where our only alternative is trust him. What other alternative do we have? What other option? Quit? Tried. Yeah, it won't work. He ain't gonna let us quit. We gotta trust God. I'm telling you, it's time to realize there's a battle. He said, count those people who are able to go to war and are willing to fight. It got to where all they had was each other and God. Those places of cities where he could have taken them, where they could have got refreshed and rested and relaxed at least for a while. Oh, we can breathe now. I know we got to start out again tomorrow. We got to start out again next week. But, Oh, for a minute I can rest. For a minute I can drink. For a minute I can eat. For a minute we can be refreshed. There were no places of refreshment. They had to trust each other and they had to trust God. And that's where we're at, folks. In a very little way, that's where we're at compared to them. I have mentioned this morning the priority involved. He said, you count them and you count the ones that's old enough to fight. Don't worry about anything else. And the people involved, they were family and fearful and following. I'm going to go ahead and close. I hadn't really even got my message, to be honest. The power involved. She just sang, there's a miracle in every pew. That means God has the power needed to do what's needed. He has the power needed to do what's needed. What do you mean? Whatever you need. Whatever you need. I don't know that any of us has faced what they faced in the wilderness journey. And surely after they've crossed the promise into the promised land, I don't know that we've ever faced anything like that at all. But God was powerful enough and God was able to take care of them. I think He can handle what we're going through. Got a letter from our missionary that's in the Middle East, where they get killed for handing out a Bible or a tract. And he says, always at the bottom in red letters, do not give my name on your website. Because if they find them, they'll kill them. And in the letter that I read this morning, he's talking about many people are still getting killed. But he says, many, many, many are getting saved. I want to tell you what, we in America think we're having it tough. We're not having it tough. Now it's tough for us because we're spoiled. Tough for us because we're not used to it. But I want to tell you one thing, we could be in worse shape. But the God who is able to take care of the people of Israel is able to take care of the person out there in the Middle East, and He's able to take care of me and you. He has the power to take care of us. I say it again, think of it. Hey, God probably thought, you think I'm having a trouble with the fact that you don't have any water? Do you think that's a problem for me? Do you think I could not lead you to a well if I wanted to? By the way, I don't have to lead you to a well. I am the well. Could I remind you? Since I ain't going to finish, I'll go ahead and tell you this. God provided their thirst from a rock. And if He can provide thirst for 2 million people plus their cattle with a rock, He can take care of you. He may need another rock, I don't know, but if He does, He's got one. He provided manna just out in the ground. They went and gathered it every morning. He provided quail. They flew so low, all they had to do was just reach out and get them. I'm talking about God had the power needed to take care of the problems they were going through. And that same God is on the throne this morning in your life and mine, in this country and the other countries, in the world. He is God of the universe. He made sure the sun came up this morning. And He'll make sure to put it to bed tonight. And He's done that. He can take care of what you're going through. Power involved. Probably thought, you worried about that enemy across the Jordan? Well, I know they have weapons. I know they're trained. And I know for a good while in Egypt, you've been slaves. You are not trained. You are not equipped. You have no weapons. And they have all of the above. And you've been serving Pharaoh and making bricks, and now for a little bit over a year, you've been camped out at Sinai. And I know you're going into a battle that is absolutely humanly impossible. But I want to remind you something. I am the God of the battle. You may not have their weapons, you may not have their know-how, but they don't have your God. And He can handle it. I just want to tell you, everything's going to be all right. I've gotten to the message, and I'm going to quit. I'll try and preach it tonight. What we're going through is real. To think otherwise is foolish. To think we're exempt from anything this world is facing as a Christian is foolish. I can name five churches that's probably had, best I can just count off the top of my head, at least 200 people that's had the coronavirus or have it now. And some of them have died. Some of them just got well in a few days and everything's fine. But I'll tell you something. Those people love God just as much as we do. And I know those preachers well, all of them. And I believe that they believe God, maybe more than I do. But we're still in a battle. We're still in a war that's real. So we need to realize we've got each other and we've got our Father. And that's enough. No matter what, that's enough.